Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The November election resulted in a big change in the makeup of the Mecklenburg County Commission. Gone are all the Republicans. For the first time since 1964, the commission is made up entirely of Democrats. The board has four new faces on it, and for the first time, the chairman of the board is a district representative and not one of the at-large commissioners. The fact that the board is now controlled by one party may end up being a double-edged sword for Democrats. Yes, they get to call all the shots unimpeded, but they also have to take the blame should anything go wrong or rub voters the wrong way. And that could happen, considering this is the board that will have to deal with whatever fallout comes from the impending property tax revaluation. So this hour, let's meet the four newest members of the Mecklenburg County Commission, one of whom is also the newly elected vice chair. Elaine Powell represents District 1, which covers North Charlotte, Huntersville, Cornelius, and Davidson. She defeated longtime incumbent Republican Jim Puckett. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. First time on the radio? You look like a first-timer. Are you a first-timer?
It's my first time on the radio on purpose.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Mark Jarrell represents District 4, which covers East Charlotte. He replaced outgoing Democrat Dumont Clark, who stepped down after 18 years. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Susan Harden is District 5, her District 5, covers the Southeast Charlotte wedge between Independence and South Boulevard, formerly represented by Republican Matthew Ridenhour. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
And Susan Rodriguez McDowell's District 6 covers a wide swath in the southern part of the county, and she ousted longtime Republican Bill James. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I just found out, thanks to Elaine Powell, that you all have been campaigning together for the better part of this last year. How did I miss that? What have you been doing?
Well, when you campaign, you end up going to a lot of the same events together. And so I think that one of the nice things about the energy between us is that we have taken the time of campaigning to get to know each other. And we actually really like each other and are looking forward to serving together. I think we have a bond and a friendship, and I think that relationship building is going to go a long way this coming year.
I just want everybody to know that everybody's nodding in agreement. If you're not watching us on Facebook Live, it's on radio, you can't see that, but they're all nodding in agreement. And by the way, if you want to join our conversation, you can. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org, get to WFAE on Facebook, or search for us on Twitter at Charlotte Talks. In the weeks since the election, we have talked to numerous politicians and political scientists about what happened on Election Day here and around the country and just how big the so-called blue wave was. The county commission arguably is the place where this really came into focus because you are all Democrats, as I mentioned in the opening. Why do you think voters made that decision? I'll start with you, Elaine Powell.
In District 1, I traveled on the campaign trail. I traveled to every street in District 1 to talk to people, to hear what was important to them. And I think that people just want to have their voices heard. And I think that in my case, some people felt like their voices weren't being heard. And I have never asked anybody if their political affiliation when they are talking to me, because I feel like anyone's input is so important. And it doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. I just want to know what your point of view is. And I think people felt that and knew it when I was talking to them. So in my case, I think people's voices wanted to be heard.
Susan McDowell.
In my case, I think in District 6, people believed in my message. And it was one about representation, about wanting to show up and be there and be present in the community. And I think people weren't used to that sort of approach from the previous commissioner. So I think that was a big part of it.
Mark.
Yeah, I have to echo with what Susan and Elaine said. I think it's messaging. I think it was, you know, grassroots getting out on the ground and just ensuring that everyone's voice was being heard. Mm. My case is a little bit different from these guys because after the primary, I didn't have a general election opponent, but I had the opportunity to see them, and we were still in the same places, and it definitely message resonated.
Why do you think you didn't have an opponent?
Well, I think the demographics of my district are a little different. I think for a Republican in District 4, it's definitely an uphill battle, but that's not to say that we don't have a message that resonates with everyone in our district.
Susan Hardin.
Yeah, I think just the opposite. I think that people were surprised that a Democrat could win District 5, mm-hmm. and I think that it was about hard work. It was about organizing. It was about a message of education and health care, and that superseded any kind of political boundary.
Mm. Well, you beat Matthew Ridenour.
I did.
And we had Matthew Ridenour on the program, I think, last week. And one of the things he has said about this is that he had an experience at the polling place where somebody came up and said, I like you, I like what you've done, but I simply cannot vote for you because you are a Republican. I'm not voting for any Republicans. None of you mentioned the Trump effect. None of you mentioned the changing demographics of Mecklenburg County as having added to your or contributed to your election victory here. Did that not play a role in your mind?
Absolutely. In my mind, District 6 has changed tremendously over the past 22 years. And so it's growing. It's one of the fastest growing areas in the county. And so I do think that was a big part of it. We never mentioned Trump on the campaign trail.
We didn't.
That just wasn't part
of it. Did he not come up?
Absolutely.
Not by you, but by people you're talking to? They didn't mention him?
You know, they didn't really.
I think people are kind of tired of talking about national politics. I think that we were trying to talk about how important local decisions are for people's lives. I think that one thing we did try to talk about is integrity and truth. Mm-hmm. And so while I certainly didn't talk about Trump by name, I wanted to put forward, and I think we all did, candidates that embodied certain values and civic characteristics that we thought were important.
So let me stick with you for a second, Susan, because you beat Matthew Ridenour. He was a moderate Republican who was known for reaching across the aisle and trying to work things out with Democrats, and yet you defeated him, and you did so without talking about Donald Trump and just stressing truth. You're not saying that he didn't tell the truth, are you?
No, I think Matthew Ridenour did certainly tell the truth, absolutely.
Right.
But I'm just saying that I think that people were looking for candidates who were different than what they were seeing on the national level.
So how will your – this goes to all of you, but I'll start with Susan Hardin. How will your leadership be different than that of your predecessor?
I mean, I think that one of the things that I bring that my district was definitely interested in is an expertise in education. I can tell you that District 5 has some of the largest high schools. We have Myers Park High School with now 3,500 students, the largest high school.
District 5 includes Cotswold.
Cotswold, Myers Park, South Charlotte. And so so education is a top concern, and I am a professor of education at UNC Charlotte. I bring a strong understanding about and a vision for what I think our schools can be. So I think that that's one thing that just an expertise about a subject that I think is of critical importance to my district.
Okay. Susan Rodriguez-McDowell, you replaced Bill James. How will your leadership be different?
Well, as I said before, I think being present is something that I will do differently. And emphasis on relationship building, that is just one of the areas I'm most interested
by
in.
By being present, do you mean accessible? Because Bill James did a lot of things by tweet and Facebook post, and he showed up for the meetings, but he didn't do a lot of going out into the community. As I said before we started, he never came on this show live in person. He was on the phone, but he wouldn't come out. Are you talking about accessibility as opposed to being present?
When I say present, I mean I'm planning, and I have been in the community, showing up at events, out talking to people, out interacting with folks, and I think that's really important that people see, they see you and they hear you, and they what I want to do is be someone that brings what's happening at the county level to the towns, because I do have three towns in my district. And so I do plan on being very present to those towns and to the others in my district.
Elaine Powell, you replaced Jim Puckett, who had the opposite. He wasn't like Bill James at all. He was very present. He was very vocal. He was a leader. Whether you agree with his point of view or not, he was a leader on key issues that faced the district that he represented and also the community at large. How will you be different?
First, I want to say I have a great deal of respect for Commissioner Puckett, and he did a lot of good work in the community, and he loves the community. The way that I differ is I have 29 years of community experience. So I have the flip side. You know, some people have a lot of experience in elected leadership. I have 29 years of experience in community leadership.
Yeah, I should bring that up. You were, and maybe you still are, I don't know, a Park and Rec commissioner, member of the County Natural Resources Stewardship Advisory Council, the Mecklenburg County North Park Region Advisory Council, the Mecklenburg County Waste Management Advisory Board, and that just scratches the surface.
Yes.
What motivates you? Why all these different boards and councils and commissions? What's up?
When I grew up, it was part of a family value system of using your strengths and talents to help others. And so it was modeled throughout my life in my family and in school, and I grew up believing that that is an important thing to do and have done that in my life.
What do you see as your strengths and talents?
I'm a very good listener, and I really like to hear different points of view. I think that we all have different life experiences that add to making better decisions. So I love to hear different points of view.
Yeah.
People say, you know, well, look at it from this point of view, or what if this? I enjoy that, and I think that's an important part of elected leadership, making sure that we listen to different points of view so that we can make healthy decisions.
I'm going to come back to that in a second, but Mark, I want to get your answer to how you see your leadership being different, or in your case, because you're replacing Dumont Clark, a fellow Democrat who just chose not to run again, how it will be similar to what Dumont Clark did.
Sure. For me, you know, replacing Dumont, I have huge shoes to fill. He served 18 years faithfully to the people of District 4. The people respect him. They love him. His intellect is really unmatched. And for me, I'm going to continue to do the things that I've been doing in the community. I've been someone who's been volunteering and working hard and trying to affect change in a positive way, whether that was through the Black Political Caucus or running campaigns and trying to get good people elected. I think where my value add comes in is that my thought process on what we can do as commissioners is probably not in the traditional sense of what we've been accustomed to.
Meaning
impacting affordable housing, looking at the way we look at education and accountability and equity and priority when it comes to open space, parks and rec, and those types of issues. And I think that was what resonated with people while we were all on the campaign trail. There was just a different thought process.
Mm-hmm. I don't have time to ask this question because we're about to go to a break, but I'll give you a chance to think about it. I'll give you a little preview of the question, because you mentioned, Elaine, that you're a good listener and that you like listening to different points of view from different people. And all of you, I believe, when I read about you yesterday, mentioned listening as being an important part of this process of being on county commission. Everybody has an opinion. And if you listen to their opinions, then what do you do? Because it may not agree with your opinion. It may not agree with the prevailing opinion. It may not agree with what you think is right or where you want to take the city or the county in this case. So what do you do with all that? How do you synthesize that? We'll get an answer to that when we come back. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We have the four newest members of the Mecklenburg County Commission with us today. Elaine Powell represents District 1. Mark Durrell, District 4. Susan Harden, District 5. Susan Rodriguez-McDowell, District 6. And just before the break, I asked you how you synthesize what you hear, what you're hearing from constituents, whether you agree with them or not, whether it's a good idea or not. So you listen, but you didn't act on what I told you, so you're not representing me. What do you do with that information? How do you make it work for you?
Well, I think that listening is one of the deepest forms of civic engagement you can do for a person, a citizen. I mean, everybody wants to be heard. And I think that when you're not heard as a citizen, you want to be heard and you want to be treated fairly. Mm-hmm. And so when those two things take place, I think that you see a rise in civic engagement. And I think that that's one thing that we all care about, is that we really care about our communities and we want people to be engaged. So, to hear only from one perspective, I think, goes against the idea of caring for your community and community engagement. You want to hear from everybody.
Absolutely.
Nationally, a lot of people have felt unheard, and that's why we have such division in the country, why we have such anger in the country about political points of view. And the people who felt unheard, at least when they elected Donald Trump, took it out on Democrats. How will you be better?
Well, I think that what you're seeing now is a rise of candidates who've never served office before. Mm. I mean,
From the
bottom up. I mean, the four of us have never served elected office before.
Okay.
So I think that what you're seeing is kind of new people stepping into the space.
You folks, and I mean by you folks, I mean the county commission, the eight members, you're among the eight members of the county commission that voted for District 3 Representative George Dunlap to be the chair of the commission. Historically and traditionally, it has been an at-large member, and usually the at-large member who's gotten the most votes because they are representing the most people. You chose a district representative. Why?
I think what we wanted was a fresh start, and in our situation that we had.
And yet he's an old-timer on the board.
He's an old-timer,
you could have elected one of yourselves if you wanted a fresh start.
Well, it was a fresh start as chair. The previous at-large folks have all served as chair in the past.
Okay.
And so so when we say a fresh start, we're saying we're giving George our support as a fresh start as chair. That's what we...
And if Elaine as vice chair. We have someone
who's
newly elected,
right,
and who served the community 29 years, and we feel really comfortable with what she brings and what she adds to the board.
Did you want that job? Did it come as a surprise to you that they gave you the vice chair of the board?
It's an honor. I'm always willing to do what is necessary to get the job done, and I do have a lot of experience with the flip side. So the whole infrastructure of citizen engagement that county government has with advisory boards, advisory commissions, and councils. I have experience with that, of making sure that when we are making decisions, that we are asking for citizen input from those levels in addition to outreach to the community.
Go ahead. I was just going to
say, Rodriguez.
Another important part of the decision was we did want to have someone with experience to walk through this revaluation process. We knew this was going to be an important year to have some leadership that was experienced.
Well, following the election, your predecessor, Elaine, Jim Puckett, former Republican commissioner, says it is the Democratic Party that has been in charge. You are now completely in charge, because the Republicans were in the minority. And he laid at Democrats' feet responsibility for problems such as lack of affordable housing, deficiencies in the school system. He said, "I look forward to you solving those in the next 2 years. I'm not really sure how you're going to do it, but you won't be bothered by the Republicans getting in your way." Is that sour grapes or simply the hard, cold reality?
Oh, that's the reality. I mean, the fact of the matter is all of us were elected to do this job, and I'm looking forward to taking on those issues. The voters should hold us accountable. I think we all of us come with a mandate and an aggressive agenda to deal with those issues that Mr. Puckett laid out. And I guess, you know, I just ask that voters give us a chance. I think they're going to be surprised with, hopefully pleasantly surprised with what we deliver.
Why? Why do you think that?
Well, I think that all of us have are very clear and strategic about how we're going to go about our business. I think that we are we're not a lot of game players here. We're really focused on what's best for the community, and I think that the community is going to be pleasantly surprised.
Mark Terrell.
Mike, I really think it's important for us to take a step back and really understand that if we're serious about solving problems, that we can't retreat to our respective camps and corners. I don't think any of our problems can be solved by a party. We are open to hearing from everyone. And I personally believe it's important for us to hear from everyone. I don't care if they have a D, an R next to their name. We've got serious community problems that have to be solved together. And I don't see how we can do that if alone.
But you all have D's after your names, and that's going to be held up by people who have R's after their names. So this fact that you run everything now, including the city council, does that fact make you bolder in your decision-making, or does it make you look over your shoulder and say, well, we better temper these Democratic ideals a little bit because there are Republicans out there who are looking very carefully at us?
I mean, I don't think that we're putting forward Democratic ideals. I think we're putting forward good ideas. Okay. And so wherever they come from, right. Republicans, Democrats, unaffiliated, there's as many unaffiliated in my districts as there are Republicans or Democrats. I think we're looking for good ideas. Bring on your good ideas. We're listening.
Absolutely. And one thing I just want to add is our problems are really going to be long-term solutions, not quick. And I don't think any of us are thinking we're just going to come in here and in our little two-year terms and fix all the problems that have been systemic over years and years. So
historically, and this may not be true because if you look at the national situation, historically Republicans have positioned themselves as being fiscally conservative. We have the biggest national debt in our history right now, and Republicans are in charge. But nonetheless, that's how they positioned themselves. And in fact, on county commission, Republicans have acted as the stopgap, or at least the little voice in the back of your mind saying, maybe I better hold off on this expense. For instance, Jim Puckett can be credited for leading efforts against subsidizing that Major League Soccer stadium that would have cost $100 million. And now you folks are facing tax revaluations, and historically Republicans have kind of put the brakes on things. Without that voice in your ear, sitting on the commission dais with you, how will you act?
I mean, you know, the voice in my ear is my neighbor who lives next door to me, who's, you know, 85 years old, who lives on a fixed income. The voice in my ear is the teachers who live in my district who, you know, are trying to not, you know, many of them, 70% of them work second jobs. And so I don't think anybody here wants to create a community that's not affordable. And so I think you're going to see balance. I think you're going to see an eye for livability on, you know, all ends of the financial spectrum.
If I had the longer serving members of the county commission around this table this morning, would they echo those thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at how the county's been managed, I think that, you know, we have a AAA bond rating. I think that our county, the finances of our county, are really in sound physical shape. I don't think you can look at the financial health of the county and think that it's been nothing but well done and well managed. Mm.
That's Susan Harden. I'll mention your name because nobody's heard your voice before. So that's Susan Harden. She's here with Elaine Powell and Susan Rodriguez McDowell and Mark Terrell, all of the new members of County Commission. Let me go around the table very quickly, and we'll talk about these ideas and these what I'm about to ask you in greater depth. I just want to hear very quickly what you think are the most serious problems facing Mecklenburg County, the issues that you would like to tackle first. And I'll start with Mark. We'll just go left to right. Mark.
Yeah, so quickly, I'd say affordable housing, number one. If you work here, you should be able to afford to live here in our community, economic mobility. our parks and rec, our open space, connectivity with our greenways, and our park maintenance is something that's critical to the people in my district. Our education is huge. I mean, ensuring that our teachers are paid, ensuring that our classrooms are equipped for 21st century learning.
We'll talk about all these in depth, but I just want to hear the thumbnails first. Okay, Susan Harden.
I think my number one mandate is education, and certainly, my vision for the community is what if all the great teachers moved to Charlotte-Mecklenburg?
Elaine?
My number one priority is citizen engagement and making sure that citizens' voices are heard. My number two is environmental stewardship. Really looking forward to creating an environment committee where we talk about protection of natural resources. My big concern, huge concern, is the explosive growth in Mecklenburg County. How do we meet the needs of, meet the current needs and meet the future needs on a limited amount of money? So how do we create a livable Mecklenburg County?
Susan McDowell.
I would have to echo all of my colleagues here, and education is definitely one of the biggest things we have to work on. I think also the affordable housing issue, really inequality, racial and income inequality, segregation. These are the things that I just think we need to begin to reverse.
So none of you mentioned the thing that I want to talk about first, which I think is fascinating because everything you want to do requires money. Almost everything you want to do requires money. And we're facing the first property revaluation in 8 years. And the last time we had a property revaluation, it was an unmitigated disaster. And it caused a lot of problems. We lost a county manager over it. We lost, I think, the budget director over it. After eight years, we know property values will rise. I think they're estimated to rise 44% for residential property owners and about 70% for commercial property owners. That doesn't mean taxes have to go up. It just means that the property values are going up. So is it your intent to keep the tax rate, what is it called, revenue neutral?
Mm-hmm. It is mine.
It is mine.
Yeah, it is mine to keep it revenue neutral. And any increase needs to be very transparent and have a lot of citizen input on that, if there is any increase. But I'm committed to revenue neutral.
I'm not committed to anything yet because I haven't learned enough about, the impact of everything. But that's definitely my bent, is to be toward revenue neutral. I think that the process has been much improved this time. We're going to see a big change in how this whole thing is rolled out. I think that that the county has done a tremendous job of educating and engaging with the citizens already. Mm-hmm. Ken Joyner has done so many engagements. I don't know how many.
Over 100.
20 or something.
A ton. Yes.
Yeah. And so I don't think it's going to be the same sort of process that we saw the last time.
And the fact of the matter is that we're fortunate that we're in a growing community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the ways that you can fund the things that we want to do is through growth. And we're lucky that we have people moving here and bringing, new revenue into the community just by fact of moving here. And so I don't think we're in a fortunate place to make decisions.
But more people means more need for infrastructure.
Absolutely.
More classroom, more seats in the classrooms.
Absolutely.
More pipes and trash collection and more health care and things like that.
That's right.
It pays for itself or
well,
not?
Well, I mean, I think that's the question that we're going to dig into in the budget committee.
Because
it's
ago,
better than being in a devaluation where your property values are going down, where people are leaving your community. We're in a good situation.
But years ago, when this growth spurt that we've been living through now for 10 years was just beginning, we had large conversations on the show with county commission and city council and leaders in city and county government, saying that there's always a lag time between growth and the need for infrastructure to support that growth and where you need to be. There's a lag time, and it requires money. And it requires an outlay of cash first, which will get paid back later. You're saying you're not so sure about that?
Well, what I'm saying is that I think now is the time. We're going to have some visionary leadership. We're going to have new plans at the city and the county level. We're going to have a school board that's going to be tackling these issues. I think what you're going to see now is three bodies coming together to lay out a vision for the community that we can all get behind. I don't think we're going to act in our silos anymore. I think we're going to work together.
Let me hear from you on this too, Mark, because Pat Cotham, one of the Democratic, your fellow commissioner, Pat Cotham, says she's worried about the loss of the collective wisdom of the Republicans who are leaving the board, because they went through this before, this property revaluation before, and they may have some things to say about what happened before that they could help you avoid the pitfalls.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we're committed to hearing from everyone. As we said earlier, I don't think anyone's voice will be lost. I respectfully disagree with Pat's point on this. She's a friend, and I respect her immensely. But we're committed to taking in all the information and making the best decision once we've had a chance to really digest that and hear from everyone.
The mayor of Charlotte, Vi Lyles, who's not part of your organization, but the mayor will be here on Thursday because it's our monthly conversation with Mayor Lyles. And one of the things that she has been talking about forever now has been affordable housing. We had the $50 million in bonds that passed on Election Day specifically for affordable housing. You've all mentioned that affordable, I think you certainly have mentioned, Mark, that affordable housing is top of mind for you. Obviously, keeping the taxes revenue neutral will help in that, because if you raise taxes, that decreases the chance you're going to be able to hit the numbers for affordable housing. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you increase the stock of affordable housing? What role does the county have to play in that?
So, I mean, the county has a lot of assets, you know, that we're just starting to understand the issue of affordable housing and how the county can play a larger role. I think that you have people on the fresh four want to engage this issue more deeply. I think that the county has some tremendous assets that we can bring in. We also know that when we act in a coordinated fashion, we're going to be providing services to make sure that the investments in affordable housing pay the highest dividends to the community.
Anybody else want to chime in on this? About how you do this? Or is this a city role?
Traditionally, it has always been a city role. Mm-hmm. I think we are exploring how we can be part of a solution.
Okay. One of the things that is a county role is the funding of Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. And I know that you're particularly interested in schools, Susan Harden, because as you say, you're a professor of education. We're going to come back and talk about that, about economic opportunity and upward mobility, racial and income inequality, and the role all of that plays in, if you solve that, in making this a better place to live. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
If you've ever thought to yourself, I should make a podcast. Now is your chance. WFAE is proud to present the Queen City PodQuest, the search for the next great podcast from Charlotte and the surrounding areas. Learn more and submit your idea by January 27th at wfae.org/Queen City PodQuest.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking this morning with the four newest members of County Commission. They're all newly elected, first-timers. The chairman, or the vice chair, rather, of the County Commission is Elaine Powell. She represents District 1, which used to be represented by Jim Puckett. She is with us. Mark Jarrell is with us. He took the place of Dumont Clark, represents District 4. Susan Harden represents District 5, Matthew Ridenour's old district. And Susan Rodriguez McDowell took over for Bill James in District 6. By the way, Dumont Clark just emailed us to say that we did not lose our budget director after the last revaluation. The county changed tax assessors. I get the two.
I told you Dumont's intellect was unmatched.
And the city, he says, collects trash, not the county. We once did a show years ago about what the city does and the county does. We maybe should repeat that show because I don't remember what the city and the county does. And
that's You're part not of the alone.
I know. So one of the county's biggest budget items is Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. CMS says it is chronically underfunded, and some of you have stressed the importance of public education. You are an educator, Susan Hardin, and that includes you include this in your priorities. A strong, high-quality schools, higher teacher pay, more pre-K, and affordable college education. That all takes money. How do you achieve that? And is it just money? When you talk about quality education, is it just money?
Well, I think in terms of teacher pay, it's an economic problem with an economic solution. Nationwide, we have about 100,000 teacher shortage annually. We're competing for the best teachers across the nation. I think that we talk about, you know, competing for the best companies in Charlotte. I want to see us competing for the best teachers in Charlotte.
But we keep throwing it is perception that we keep throwing money at schools. At the same time, we keep throwing them all the responsibilities for society's problems and say, hey, fix this, and oh, also make them read and write.
I think these are investments. I think that the success of America is because of our investments in education. I think that this is part of what we do as a society, is that we educate folks, and those educational investments are economic elevators that push our economy forward.
But I think it's important to realize as well, when we talk about all of our issues, they're all interconnected.
Yes.
And I think if we keep looking at these issues in isolation, it's very difficult to solve. I mean, when you talk about education, you have to talk about livable wages, breaking up pockets of poverty.
Absolutely.
That we have in our community, racial equity, injustice, and so many other elements go into this pot that we have to look at comprehensively.
And how do you – you're right. We've talked about this before, and that was my next couple of topics, economic opportunity and upward mobility, and we know that we struggle with both in Charlotte. But we provide K through 12 free public education, and it all starts with education, all of it, and yet some people are falling through the cracks. Why and how do you fix that?
I mean, we've got a community. Frankly, we have two separate communities, unfortunately. We have one of poverty and we have one of prosperity. And while if we continue down that path, I mean, the gap is only going to increase. And so we really have to look at these issues of inequity in the community and get investments not just from the public sector, but the private sector has to be a major contributor here, and our nonprofits, and we have to make this a true community effort.
So Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools used to be the poster child for successful integration of school systems in the country. We have, we are told, a sterling reputation nationally, and yet people, except when they have kids in their particular school, have this negative impression of CMS, and that all we do is throw money, good money after bad, and nothing ever happens, nothing ever gets better. How would you assess Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools? I want to leave you out of this for a second, Susan Hardin, because you're the education that we'll finish with you. How would you assess this, Elaine?
Personally,
personally.
My son had an excellent education in CMS K through 12. I volunteered in CMS for 25 years, so personally, I've seen exactly what Mark is talking about, two different systems. I started off as a community partner at Eastway Middle School, and at that time, in 1989, I had never seen such poverty in a school, and even was greeted by a policeman at the front when I arrived to volunteer in 1989.
Right.
It was very surprising. So there are examples of excellence, and then there are examples of we really need to help.
How do you explain that? Why do we have two systems? Why?
Well, I wish I knew the exact answer.
Okay.
But it is, everything is interconnected, and I don't want to speak for the school board. Like,
all right.
I want us, and I think we all agree, to have a really good relationship with the school board.
But you help fund the schools. That's part of your job.
So
how do you assess the schools and how do you decide whether money is the solution to their problems or whether you have to fix other things that have nothing to do with the schools first before you can fix the schools, and what do you do in the interim? This is really a complicated issue. I know it is. It's impossible.
It's very complex, but I think, you know, especially with my history of volunteering in the schools for 25 years and seeing what a huge difference PTA and school leadership team can make in each school, and understanding the importance of the relationship mm-hmm. and collaborating with the school board, I think that we can better understand things and move forward towards solutions.
Mark?
Yeah, you know, Mike, your question makes me think about just the other day I spoke at a school where it's 99% children of color. 34% of the children classified as homeless. And I want to reiterate that 34%. I'm not really sure how children that are homeless can come to school prepared right. to learn. Right. And I think in our community, you know, we have to measure ourselves by our weakest link. And if we're using that standard, it's going to be impossible to give us a good grade.
Which leads to economic opportunity and upward mobility, which is part of the problem here in Charlotte. Those are issues that we've been grappling with for a long time now. Where do you begin? Because this, the economic opportunity is you have to deal with private employers for the most part and encouraging them to hire people and take a chance on people and promote people over time so that they can rise through the ranks.
I think one of
the most...
What role
does government play in that?
So I think one of the most conservative approaches to the issues is to deal with fairness and justice. I'm not advocating for more programs. I'm advocating for treating people fairly. If you pay women the same wage as you pay men, you address economic mobility. If you pay African Americans the same wage you pay white folks, you address economic mobility. People aren't asking for more or to be treated specially. They just wanted to be treated fairly.
But how do you do that? How does a government in a capitalist democracy or republic
you model
that?
You talk about it. You use your position to appeal to fairness and justice. And so I think that leaders in the private industry and across our community want that. It's just saying this is one way to deal with economic mobility is to treat people fairly.
We have to model livable wages as
yes.
well. So in government, I mean, those are certain areas that we can control. So to ensure that everyone that works for the county and the city have livable wages, I think is really, really important for the private sector to try to model that as well.
Is there an appetite for that in the private sector? Do they need to be shamed into it? Can you arm twist? Can you provide incentives? What do you have to do?
Well, I'm not for shaming, but I am in for partnerships and inviting people into the space to have conversations about it. Again, I think that the business leaders want all kinds of people in their community, and that they recognize that people are hardworking. They just want to be treated fairly.
I think it's important to the idea of leadership and showing and demonstrating why is this good for business. You know, why is that good? And another piece I just wanted to bring to it is the idea of the fact that we've segregated ourselves so much. And I think that really leads to so many problems that we have. And so if we can, as leaders, as community leaders ourselves, but also if we can encourage others to desegregate ourselves, that would help desegregate our schools.
Peter on Facebook writes, I have lived in Charlotte for 50 years. I have heard these promises to fix everything from both Republicans and Democrats. When will we see solutions to affordable housing, income inequality, education, etc., rather than promises?
We need public will. I think that's one thing we really need is the public to commit to
so
it.
We're waiting for you to solve our problems, and we need to solve our
well,
problems.
Well, I mean, we invite Peter to come speak to the Board of County Commissions. One of the things that we, I think mm-hmm. all of us would like to see, and what I'm encouraging folks to do, is know that if they come before the dais, that we're listening.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And I think to Peter's point, I think one of the reasons why all of us ran was because we were always hearing about the same issues over and over. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, for me, I can say a huge driver was the fact that I wanted to connect the activism with specific policy.
2 years ago, when the Young Turks, I'll use that term for lack of a better one, won on city council, they kept saying, and Mayor Lyles also said during the campaign, the time for talk is over. The time for action has come. Are you saying the same things?
Absolutely.
Without question.
So how do you know where to start? Because one of the things that you mentioned, Elaine, is you wanted to set up an environmental committee. You have all these other problems. Where does the environment come into all of this?
Can you think of anything more important than clean air and clean water, clean soil? I mean, nothing else matters.
Don't we have that?
No. These are issues that need to be addressed and thought through and have a comprehensive plan going forward to make sure that we don't end up like Detroit. But definitely a top priority.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? I mean, we're going to go to work today. We're going to go to work next Tuesday. We're working every day on these issues. We're going to create some strategic plans. We're going to talk with our partners at CMS and the city. And I mean, I'm proud of the things that the city has accomplished with the new energy and I certainly want to. I admire my colleagues there, and I hope to accomplish as much as they've done in the short period of time they've been there.
One thing we haven't talked about is the problems at the Mecklenburg County Health Department. We witnessed about a year or two ago the failure to inform about 185 women that their pap smear tests were inaccurate. Channel 9 was inadvertently supplied patient information, medical information. It wasn't their fault. It was the health department's fault. And it was pointed out that during all this debate about this, that Mecklenburg County is the only county in the state that operates its health department without independent medical oversight. In May, the old county commission voted 6-2 to form an ad hoc committee to explore potential changes at the health department. The committee never met. This now falls to you. Knowing what happened in the past, have you given any thoughts to how things should change? You're the vice chair, Elaine. I'll put the bug on you.
And so we've asked for more information on this, and in fact, I think we'll be getting some today. Mm-hmm. And I would like to carry on with, you know, Commissioner Puckett wanted to have this ad hoc committee to look at possibly having medical professionals available for a board.
Because right now the county commission is that board of health.
Correct.
Right. Yeah.
And I like his idea.
Okay.
And so I hope to champion that going forward and get, you know, really get some information and look into that and go forward. Because, you know, it's logical that you would have medical health professionals looking over and guiding the health department.
We have 2 minutes left, and Mark, you've been outnumbered all morning here, and I get the feeling that you're going to continue to be. Because along with the blue wave in this last election, we also experienced nationally a pink wave. More women have been elected to office than ever before. That was also the case on county commission. How do you think the presence of more women will impact what decisions are made and how decisions are made?
So, I mean, now we have 6 women on the county commission.
Yeah.
I mean, we felt like it was important that a woman be in a leadership role. We're thrilled that Elaine Powell is taking on that. And but we have, you know, 6 strong women, and I think that you know, we're looking forward to being collaborative. We're looking forward to listening. We're looking forward to taking care of issues, you know, that focus in on the home, like education and healthcare.
I think what you said about being collaborative, being relational,
yeah.
Especially with the other, with CMS, with City Council, you know, I think that as women, maybe we have a little bit different approach.
We also only have 30 seconds left, but we've also heard about the importance of diversity in governing bodies. And at the county commission level, this last election saw the loss of four white guys. They were all voted out or chose not to run. They were replaced by three white women and an African-American man. There are now no white men on county commission. What should we take from this, Mark?
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate that. We should take from this that the community and the people are ready for everyone to have a voice, and that no one should feel isolated.
Mark Jarrell, who is in District 4, East Charlotte. Elaine Powell, the vice chair, District 1, which is the northern part of the county. Susan Harden, District 5, the South Charlotte Wedge. And Susan Rodriguez-McDowell, District 6 in Southern Mecklenburg. Thank you all. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.